Translation. Beginning from me, Brahma.
Beginning from me, Brahma.
Down to you and Baba Shiva.
Down to you and Baba Shiva.
All the great sages who were born before you.
All the great sages who were born before you.
Demigods.
Demigods.
The demons.
The demons.
The nagas.
The nagas.
The human beings.
The human beings.
The birds and beasts.
The birds and beasts.
As well as the reptiles, etc., and all phenomenal manifestations of the universes, namely the planets, stars, asteroids, luminaries, lightning, thunder, and inhabitants of the different planetary systems, namely the Gandharvas, Apsaras, Yakshas, Rakshas,
Bhutaganas,
Uragas, Pashus, Pitas, Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, and all other different varieties of living entities,
including the birds,
beasts, trees, and everything.
And everything.
All are covered by the universal form of the Lord.
All are covered by the universal form of the Lord.
At all times.
Namely,
past, present, and future.
Past, present, and future.
Although he is transcendental to all of them.
Although he is transcendental to all of them.
Eternally existing in the form.
Eternally existing in the form.
Not existing, not exceeding 9 inches.
Not exceeding 9 inches.
He has many forms. Huh? Purport by his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his partial representation, measuring not more than 9 inches as Supersoul, expands by his potential energy in the shape of the universal form, which includes everything manifested in different varieties of organic and inorganic materials. The manifested varieties of the universe are therefore not different from the Lord, just as golden ornaments of different shapes and forms are non-different from the original stock reserve of gold. In other words, the Lord is the Supreme Person who controls everything within the creation, and still he remains the supreme separate identity distinct from all manifested material creation. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5, he is therefore said to be Yogeshwara. Everything rests on the potency of Lord Sri Krishna, and still the Lord is different from and transcendental to all such identities. In the Vedic Purusha Sukta of the Rig Mantra, this is also confirmed. This philosophical truth of simultaneous oneness and difference was propounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and is known as... Brahma, Narada, and all others are simultaneously one with the Lord and different from the Supreme Lord. We are all one with him, just as the gold ornaments are one in quality with the stock gold, but the individual gold ornament is never equal to the quantity of the stock gold. The stock gold is never exhausted, even if there are innumerable ornaments emanating from the stock, because the stock is Purnam, complete. Even if Purnam is deducted from the Purnam, still, the Supreme Purnam remains the same, Purnam. Mm-hmm. Who knows that verse? Very good. Where does that come from? Invocation. Lord Chaitanya, therefore, defined his theory of philosophy as achintya. What does that mean? Achintya means what? Who said inconceivable? One of the kids said that?
Yeah.
Inconceivable. Somebody said that. That's what it means. Achintya, beyond the mind. Achintya means the thinking. Chintya. Achintya. Can't think of it. And confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita as well, in the Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya's theory of achintya beta beta tattva is the perfect philosophy of the Absolute Truth. So the Bhagavad Gita is mentioned here, 9, 4, and 5. That's where the Achintya Beta Beta is one of the places where it's stated. Who knows the verse? And? Right. Pashyame yoga maishwaram. Just see my mystic power, Krishna said. Bhuta vrit na chabhuta sto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. Just see my mystic power. So mayata tamidam sarvam. He pervades everything and everything rests on him, but he's not in it. So this is the inconceivable. Krishna is the biggest and the smallest. He's inside of everything, but he's outside of everything. Everything is in him, but he's in everything. So there's no comparison to that. Only some very crude examples. Like air in the material world is all pervasive, but and the mind, but not like Krishna. But Prabhupada told that we should discuss this simultaneously, one indifference. It comes out to be unity and diversity or something. That's another way of looking at it. And when we say that to a materialistic person, they might say, well, that, you know, that doesn't answer it. We want to know exactly how big it is and how much it weighs and where it came from and all this. They want to define everything like that, so they don't like that. They just say there's no God, it's all false, because they can't put Krishna in a box. He's everywhere. He's everything all at once. He's creating everything and annihilating everything, but he's within everything at the same time. But this second canto, we have the seed verses of the Bhagavatam in the ninth chapter, and it says the same thing, that before there was anything, I was there, and after there's before there was Shiva, before there was Brahma, before there was anything, I was there, and after it's all gone, I'm still going to be there. Right? And anyone who thinks of anything separately from me, that's Maya. You think that anything can exist separately from God, but people are trying to do that, to separate church and state, and think that, you know, religion is just, you know, some Sunday thing or something. So here we, you know, Brahma's listing all the, you know, so many things that are in the universe. So it's all known, you know, this is stated a very long time ago. And modern science doesn't even know about a lot of these things. They keep, you know, they do their so-called research and say there's no life on other planet. Or they say there might be life on Mars, so, you know, pay your taxes and we'll find out. There was some time. But at the same time, everybody believes in other planetary people, you know, UFOs and so many movies with, you know, and TV shows, and one of the most popular ever was that Star Trek, you know. And they met so many non-earthly human beings. I didn't watch every show they ever did. It was started when I was very young, even that's how old I was. But usually they're some kind of hideous things, you know. And even the friendly ones, you know, they were what? If you saw them walking down the street, you'd say you should go to a plastic surgeon or something. You know, because that's what they did. They put so much to make them look kind of ugly. I think one time there was a show and somebody met some demigod or something that was actually beautiful and the girl was in love with them. But generally everybody they meet is some horrible, nasty thing that's trying to conquer Earth, and, you know, the little puny humans have to somehow defeat them with something, you know. But so they haven't really understood the demigods who are so beautiful, and so superior in body and intelligence and in every way. They just keep trying to say that this human beings as we know them today, this is the topmost so-called evolution. And they just have to keep proving it to us that we're the best. So it's quite stupid. So the demigods, the demons, the Nagas are, they live under the earth, right? Kind of in the same, somehow or other. Arjuna had a Naga wife he met one time when he was bathing. So they can be very beautiful, but, and that somehow people have idea of these, the UFO, they call the greys, you know, they kind of look like snakes. So they have some idea. The human beings, the birds, the beasts, the reptiles, there's all these different things, and they're everywhere. And then the different universes, and the planets, the stars, asteroids, luminaries, lightning, thunder, all these things. And again, then all the different types of higher humans, Gandharvas, Apsaras. We know something about some of them, right? The Gandharvas are the natural musicians of the universe. They always sing and dance at every, you know, big festival. They're also great warriors. Arjuna was good friends of the king of the Gandharvas, and he learned singing and dancing. So Arjuna was not only the greatest archer in the world, but he was the greatest singer and dancer. Better than Michael Jackson. Then the Apsaras are the beautiful heavenly girls, the Indras, you know, intimate associates or something that take care of Indra, dance for Indra, and then Yakshas and Rakshas are more considered more demoniac types of characters. Bhutaganas, the ghosts. They're also for real. There's such a thing. I don't know, the Urugas, Pashus, Pitas, the forefathers, Siddhas, the Siddhaloka. Everybody has all mystic powers. They're born with it. They don't have to do tapasya in this life or anything. They have all mystic powers. And the Vidyadars, the Charanas, and all the other different varieties, birds, bees, trees, and everything, are all covered by the universal form of the Lord. They're all within the universal form of the Lord, which is really not a form of the Lord exactly, but imagination that these all things are all part of that. Krishna's of the transcendental body. So he's existing in this form that's talking about the super soul. It says not exceeding 9 inches. That would probably be in human beings. It's supposed to be like this big or something. The super soul in the heart.
Nice.
Well, yeah, but it depends on the size of the body. It's not 9 inches in an ant's body. It's relative. But that's just one form. It's a portion of, you know, yashyaika nishasita kalam kalabala jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanasa vishnur mahan sayasya kalavishesho. That Mahavishnu is just a, you know, a portion of a portion of a portion, very far removed from Krishna. First there's Balaram, and then there's the Chaturvyuha in the spiritual world, and then there's expansion from that to some other Narayana, and then there's a Chaturvyuha within the material universes, and on down the line until finally there's Mahavishnu. It's not the greatest. Krishna is the origin of everything. And that's what is the Bhagavatam, of course, stresses. So, and Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, what does he say? That chapter 10, right? Say it loud.
Say it loud.
So he says twice, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, everything comes, I am the source of everything. I am the, and Matak Sarvam Prabhu, everything comes from me. Says it again. But the Mayavadi to say doesn't mean him. I don't know, I say this many times, that somebody has it. Why don't you just do a search for Aham in the Bhagavad Gita? See how many times Krishna says it. Huh? It comes up quickly. So many times he says it. Uh-huh. No, but it says it'll tell you how many years.
Yeah, so many.
Does it give, it gives the number, doesn't it? How much?
7,540.
More than one for every verse. And then how many times say mom?
Mom.
May. You know. And then the Mayavadis say, but he doesn't mean him. He means some other thing. But so then why do you read Bhagavad Gita if you think Krishna is so foolish that he doesn't even know the language, he doesn't know what he's talking about? He says, you won't see me as I am here before you. He tells Arjuna. Exactly. In this form. So, this is what we're trying to understand. Krishna is the source of everything. Just reading this was interesting about all the different, when it talks about the, you know, the insects and the reptiles up, you know, through the different species. So I was just reading the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Prickett was, he's actually quoting the gopis and then talking about the glories of Vrindavan. So the gopis, in their anxiety of separation from Krishna, they were talking about how glorious Vrindavan is. So they started with the grass and the trees and saying how, you know, different gopis, and they say that they're much more fortunate than us, you know, because Krishna walks on that. And the bees, when they mention insects, but especially the bees, you know, they follow Krishna everywhere and they're always chanting his glories. And we can't do that. You know, they're much more better devotees than us. They're getting much more mercy. And then the birds, you know, the birds fly around Krishna and they can follow him everywhere. And we can't do that. And we have to stay back in the village while Krishna's gone all day. They're better than us. And the clouds. The cloud, you know, just describe it, you know, it gets hot, and Krishna and his friends are just playing like kids, and they forget, they don't see shade or something. So the cloud goes like umbrella and sprinkles, not exactly rain, but little mist or something, cooling. And it's even described as flowers, might be even just actually dropping flowers down, but like flowers. It's not rain, it makes you wet. Sometimes I don't know if you have that here. Some places we get that kind of rain, like in Hawaii or something. You know, you don't get wet, but you get cool. Not like, it's just like some kind of mist, you know, like a spray, you know. So the clouds do that for Krishna. They have their consciousness, so the gopis are saying the clouds are much more. They went right down all the way to everybody's more fortunate than them. All the different entities of Vrindavan. Sometimes, you know, people think the mood of the gopis means, you know, they're off in the bushes with Krishna, and that's what they want to be, right? But that, we read it, it's that mood, is that they're feeling inferior, they're feeling like all these others are getting all this association with Krishna, and we don't get it. You know, they have to, they get up, well, because sometimes they get to sneak out, they have to sneak away at night with Krishna. And in the morning, they all rush to his house to see him or, you know, help Mother Yashoda dress him or something. But then when he goes in the forest, they have to stop at a certain point. They go deep in the forest, and then the gopis can't come. And so they're just all day waiting for Krishna. And in this anxiety of waiting to see Krishna again, they just talk about Krishna so much, so intensely. And then they're even closer because talking about Krishna is the same as being with Krishna. And that's why we have Bhagavatam. Is really, the whole thing is to tell us about Krishna, to remember Krishna. Everything we do is meant to help us remember Krishna. We have deities and we can see the form of the Lord. It's described many times. We were just reading this the other day, and at the end of the ninth candle, that's when it first, Krishna's throughout the Bhagavatam, but right at the end of the ninth candle, that's where you really start to, you know, Krishna appears and it gives all the dynasties, you know, all these kings and all their this and that. Finally, you get Krishna in the other dynasty. And it's very interesting that, I'll just look it up there. It says that, it's talking about the beauty of Krishna, which is stated that of all the, what are the six opulences? Let one person at a time so we can catch it.
All strength, all knowledge, all beauty, all strength, all wealth, all renunciation.
Right. He's not attached. He's not proud of that he has all those things. He's renounced. So of all of them, the beauty is the most wonderful. This is stated by the Acharya. So this verse is the last, third to the last verse of the ninth canto. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments, such as earrings resembling sharks. And you were all reading the Damodar prayers a lot, right? So it says that the earrings were the super fortunate because they're always touching Krishna. Yeah, they get special mercy. And his ears are beautiful. His cheeks are brilliant. And his smiling attracts everyone. Whoever sees Krishna sees a festival. I like that one. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. But the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by what?
Blinking.
So, who is a doctor here or some scientist? How many times do we blink normally? So many times every minute you blink. You don't notice it. You never notice when you blink. If you watch somebody, see how many times they blink. But we don't notice, but they would notice that they weren't seeing Krishna during that time. And the eyes are working in such a way that, you know, the things that stay there. Or the boys, when they're in the forest, you know, and Krishna's running around, if you go behind a tree, they panic. They don't see him. They're watching Krishna, all of a sudden they don't see him. And, you know, how long are you behind a tree, even if it's a big, big banyan tree or something? But, you know, usually it's very quick, you know, unless he hides. But they just go crazy looking for Krishna. So they criticize the Creator that he should have given more eyes instead of, you know, giving eyes that blink. So this seeing Krishna is a festival. But it's also described that the holy name is even more beautiful than Krishna, than the form, the Maha Mantra. And special mercy, Rupa Goswami prays like that. You know, I rejected the form. It's in the spiritual world, but still you come as the holy name. The holy name is more merciful. And then the Acharya says it's more beautiful. So it says the inhabitants of Vrindavan, especially the boys and cows, the calves, the gopis, and Krishna's mother and father were never fully satisfied. All they saw Krishna's beautiful features all the time. Seeing Krishna is described as Nitya Utsava, a daily festival. The inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost every moment. But when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds where he tended the cows, the gopis were very much afflicted because they saw him walking on the sand and thought Krishna's lotus feet, which were, they dared not place on their breasts because they thought their breasts were not soft enough, were being pierced by broken chips of stone. But even thinking of this, the gopis were affected and they cried at home. These gopis, who were therefore the exalted friends of Krishna, saw Krishna constantly, but because their eyelids disturbed their vision, the gopis condemned the creator Brahma. Therefore, the beauty of Krishna, especially the beauty of his face, is described here. At the end of the ninth canto, in the 24th chapter, we find a hint of Krishna's beauty. Now we are proceeding to the 10th canto. The entire Srimad Bhagavatam is the embodiment of Krishna's form, and the 10th canto is his face. What's the first and second canto? Huh? Feet, yeah. That's why we need to study the first and second canto and be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. Because it describes that's how we approach the Lord from the feet and up. It says even the calves and the knees and the thighs and up until finally the face. So we read through the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada miraculously in the Krishna book is the 10th canto, but he weaved in full realization of the first nine cantos so that anybody can read the 10th canto by reading the Krishna book. Very miraculous thing. And he pushed that. It was the first big book we had, you know, for mass distribution, was Krishna. And Prabhupada worked on it, designed that book. If you ever seen the original one, it was very big, 8x10 size, and with 64 pictures. Yeah, 64 pictures. Prabhupada said even the book was ready, but the pictures weren't ready. He held back the printing because he wanted all those pictures. So everything about Krishna is, you know, beautiful. Every part of his body is beautiful. His lotus feet are beautiful. All the incarnations are beautiful. Even Varaha is described as apparently a gigantic boar, which generally are not considered beautiful. Right? Some animals are considered beautiful, different dogs or horses or something, but not pigs. Usually people think, especially the boar with the, you know, vicious. But he's very beautiful. The demigods were just astounded by his beauty, and he decorated very beautifully with crowns and jewels. The Sringadevas are beautiful. I was just in the Sringa farm, and the Sringadevas are so beautiful. Everyone's attracted. Although he's a lion. Of course, lions are considered beautiful among the beasts. But Krishna in the human-like form is inconceivable beautiful. Radharani is to be more beautiful. And then Lord Chaitanya, who is the combination of Radha and Krishna, is even more beautiful. So we're very fortunate we have all this. Krishna is appearing in so many ways everywhere. There's a Sringadeva and looking very cool. And then Lord Chaitanya, Krishna and the gopis, very, very beautiful dresses. Everything is beautiful, but when you decorate Krishna, it enhances the jewelry and enhances Krishna's beauty, makes the clothes he's wearing look more beautiful. Normally you put on beautiful clothes to try to make yourself look more beautiful, right? Put some jewelry and everything to enhance, you know, that maybe I'll look more beautiful. But Krishna, when they put the jewelry on Krishna, the jewelry becomes more beautiful. But compared to Krishna, it's nothing. Even like Nityananda says, his teeth are so white. If you take a very white pearl, that's like the most white thing, right? Next to Lord Nityananda's tooth will look like gray color. His tooth is so much more white, so much more beautiful. So we have many descriptions in the Bhagavatam of, but we should not jump to the smiling face of the Lord, the 10th canto, and all these pastimes. We have to work our way up and understand how to enter into them. It's by the Panchatattva's mercy and then Lord Nityananda's mercy, Prabhupada said, then we can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can approach Radha and Krishna. So that even Mayapur, the big temple is Panchatattva and Radhamadava and the gopis, and the design and the ask Prabhupada, so Radhamadava be in the center altar. Prabhupada said, no. First Panchatattva, then by their mercy, then we move to the right, to Radhamadava. That's a proper understanding. By mercy. So we can get some understanding, and we have to understand our preaching. We have to keep this achincha beta beta tattva in mind, you know, and try to explain things. Jiva Goswami said that if one cannot accept the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, then can never understand Krishna. You know, if they want to conceive, there's so many nowadays are superheroes, right? Somebody conceived of them. They don't come anywhere close to Krishna, any of them, but, you know, they have some mystic powers sometimes. Some of them just have mystic powers. They're just very powerful, or, you know, very intelligent sometimes. Different mutants. But everybody wants that, you know, but even compared to Bhima or somebody there, you know, nobody. Compared to Arjuna. But they have guys with fire out arrows. They have everything. But nothing like Krishna. Nothing so wonderful as Krishna. But they don't like to believe in Krishna. They're making the children believe in Spider-Man. Malati was saying that she saw some signboards or something in Calcutta, and they had Hanuman, and they had Spider-Man also the same. They don't understand. Hanuman is real. And he is much more of a better hero, much more powerful, and also extremely intelligent, and, you know, worshiping the Supreme Lord, not just smashing down buildings and in the efforts to kill a demon or something. But everybody wants that, and they want to find something very great, something very beautiful. People get paid so much money for exhibiting their beauty. If someone's very strong, you know, everybody gets all excited. But many of these big, big, strong men, you know, they're lifting in the Olympics, and then they hurt their back and they can't lift anything. And then the same people hate them because they didn't win the Olympics. But that Krishna never gets old. He gets better all the time, more beautiful, more blissful, more powerful. Everything about Krishna is always increasing. So the more we can absorb ourselves in his pastimes, and, you know, Prabhupada has given us in Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, unlimited pastimes. And they're always relishable again and again. Bhagavad Gita is also a very important lila of Krishna. And Krishna is telling us that if one who studies this Bhagavad Gita, then they worship Krishna by the intelligence. And they'll never, if one teaches Bhagavad Gita or distributes Bhagavad Gita, then there'll be never anyone more dear. I was just at a book distribution festival, and all the devotees in Germany and Czechoslovakia and Slovakia, you know, had done the book marathon for 1 month. So many books were distributed. Some devotees, so many books. And in Germany, the second and third biggest distributor that Grihastha that travel, that husband and wife travel in a mobile home kind of thing and just distribute books all the time. They're very blissful, so they're very happy. And I asked the wife, I said, this is really wonderful how you're doing this, you know, putting up with the husband just constantly running around to distribute. She said, well, I cook, I clean, I do, you know, same I do at home, I just do it in the car. They have a very nice van with everything inside, kitchen and shower and altar and everything. And they just distribute books. So this is, you know, they become very blissful. And so many, many people are getting Bhagavad Gita all over the world. they meet in the newspaper. They're looking for Brother Vigan sometimes. Some people consciously know they're looking for Brother Vigan. Not so many. In Indian community, maybe, but in other places. But it's because devotees are going and presenting Bhagavad Gita everywhere so many years, people are looking for it. They've heard about it. They have some idea. So this is Krishna's causeless mercy. Lord Chaitanya's causeless mercy. Harinam festivals are going on everywhere. Devotees are chanting more and more. Today, you know, even in Dubai, there's two or three going on, right? And then all the other places, Sham Desh and Avatar Desh and whatever other deshes you have. There's Kirtan, there's Krishna Katha. Everything is going on. There's so much. That Dubai, they're bragging, you know, at the airport, it says, in 1991, there was one tower. Now there's more than 900. So in 1980, there was no devotees, I guess, right? Now there's so many. So that's good. You're moving along in the same, you know. Dubai, I saw the newspaper, they made another record. I don't know if it's a world record. I think it was. They blew off more fireworks in 1 minute than Abu Dhabi. They didn't say how much money they spent. This is how Kali Yuga is so insane. People are starving, people are homeless, people don't have health insurance, so many people in the world, majority. But all over the world they're bragging how they're spending millions of dollars on fireworks. Personally, and even devotees do it. You know, New Year's, I never invited. We want to watch fireworks, right? Ooh. Very expensive. And the New York, they said this year they had more injuries than last year. But the police said one upside of it was that the injuries weren't quite so severe. Not as many people had amputation. So this fireworks, you know, always people get hurt, get blind, blow off their hands, you know, it's very dangerous. But, you know, somehow other people like them. But we have to, you know, give a higher taste, we have to get a higher taste. You know, kirtan, chanting the holy name is so much better. Of course, devotees will chant while they're watching the fireworks. It's every city in the world, they have these, you know, for the New Year's, huge fireworks. And then, of course, India is New Year's, a different time, Diwali. And they have so much bombs going off, you know, it sounds like very, it'd be a good time to, you know, blow up bombs and shoot somebody because everybody just thinks it's just fireworks. China also, in Beijing last year, I think they said they cleaned up 18 tons of trash from the firecrackers and all the paper.
18 pounds.
That was less than the year before. See, that's how they can tell, you know. In Chinese New Year, for a few days, you know, this stands start coming out. They're like huge tables full of fireworks. And then on the last day, there's, you know, like along the side of the road, there's just nothing else. There's fireworks for sale, you know, and all the much better to do kirtan. They say that it scares away the ghosts, but kirtan scares away ghosts, I think, much better. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have to remember this anyway, inconceivable. You know, when people want to know some explanation, we have to say it's inconceivable, and they'll say, well, then that's a cop-out or something, you know, you can't explain it, but that does explain it. Intelligent person can understand that explains Krishna, and he's inconceivable. You can't just bottle him up. You can't, nobody ever, in all the superheroes in mythology and everything that's ever been written in our known history, nothing comes close to Krishna. Some are like a little bit imitation or hint of Krishna or something, but nothing comes close. It's such a person that has all this opulences, and he's also very kind. That's even the most amazing thing about Krishna, is his compassion for the living entity. So he comes and exhibits his own beauty and his own pastimes in the Vrindavan to attract everyone back to the spiritual world. This is unlimited kindness. And then he comes as Lord Chaitanya, and even more kind. And he's just giving freely the Maha Mantra, Krishna Prema. Namo Mahabharanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora Krishna. He's giving freely Krishna Prema in the form of the holy name of the Lord, if anyone wants to take it. So devotees, we want to try to take it. That's why we like association with devotees, you know, where there's an atmosphere of chanting the holy name, where people want to hear about Krishna. I'm very fortunate. Come from one place and another place, people want to hear about Krishna. All over the world, they wanted to hear about Krishna. Devotees, and everybody really wants to hear about Krishna. They don't know. They want to hear about a beautiful person or see a beautiful person, right? They always have the magazine, the most beautiful people, the most beautiful dog, the most beautiful horse. They have all that. We want beauty. Beauty shops. You know, people want to decorate their body and become beautiful. It's a huge business, the surgery to try to supposedly make you beautiful, right? Make your hair, make your face beautiful, make your skin beautiful. Big, big business. It's advertised everywhere. We want to be beautiful. We want to be rich. So how many advertisements are there on the internet? Now I'll teach you how to get rich. I'll make you beautiful. Even famous. We want to be knowledgeable. We want to be powerful. People are, you know, they have all these shops that, right, all around the block by the 607, that Life shop. You know what? You know, been in there? It's Life Pharmacy.
Life Pharmacy. Yeah.
The main thing is all this muscle building. Huge bottles of, you know, protein. And, you know, the advertisement is, all you have to do is just take this every day and you're going to... It doesn't work like that. If you also pump iron 6 hours a day, then maybe, if you have the karma, you might get like that. They're just cheating people. They think they want to be powerful, they want to be strong, they want to be influential. They want those opulences. But if one is bewildered by that, they get intoxicated by this, thinking they have a good birth. They're very rich. Shuti, they're very educated, are very beautiful, right? Edamana mada puman naivarat yavidatam, boy. They cannot approach Krishna. They can't chant the holy name in a proper state of mind. Only one who is materially bereft can really approach Krishna. It doesn't mean you have to be naked in the street with nothing, but you have to understand that there's nothing valuable in the material world. You know, it's all whatever we can gain here, we need to work, but it's not going to, it's temporary, it's not the all in all, it's not the goal. If people think just getting rich is the goal of life, or just, you know, having a healthy body or a beautiful body, or that's not the goal. It's good to have, we should take care of the body because it belongs to Krishna, but we want a healthy body so we can use it to serve Krishna. Even Bhaktisiddhanta, he wrote some letter and he said, you know, if you want a healthy body in order to be able to serve Krishna, you can pray for a healthy body. That's all right. If you just want a healthy body for sense gratification, then, you know, better, you don't worry about it. But we want it. The goal is that whatever we get, if you have money, use it for Krishna. If you have influence, if you have power, if you have knowledge, you know, whatever it is, beauty, use it for Krishna. You know, make the temple beautiful, make things beautiful so that people are attracted to Krishna. That's what devotees do. They make beautiful paintings, they make beautiful books, they make beautiful calendars, especially in Dubai. They make the most beautiful, at least in my opinion, the best calendar. I see a lot of calendars. The Dubai calendar is the best, always the best.
I will, thank you.
I hear they're coming today also. Late. In Japan, if you give someone a calendar on January, they'll say, you're supposed to give calendars in December. That's the time for giving calendars. Why are you giving me a calendar in January 1st? Kind of different mentality. You can give a calendar anytime. Now we have so many calendars everywhere, but the ones with Krishna are much more nice. Because Krishna is all attractive. Krishna's, that's what Krishna means, all attractive. Everything that's attractive is just a little spark. Krishna says, you know, in the 10th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, after he describes how all the great things, so-called great things of the material world, he says, what is the use? With just a spark of my splendor, all of this is created and maintained. All the beautiful, you know, there's so much beauty in that, even on this planet. Beautiful forests and flowers and trees and rivers and mountains, you know, it's beautiful. Yeah. Krishna's creation. If people would think of it as Krishna's creation, but mostly they don't. Right? Like when you go to, how many have gone to Atlantis? Anybody gone?
So, I haven't gone inside.
You haven't?
I haven't gone inside.
Have you gone up in the tower?
No. Yes.
So, what? How many different species of fish they say they have? It's some huge number. They're advertised in the escalator at the airport. And you can eat in your in the aquarium, you know, the fish are watching you eat. I would feel very uncomfortable. One time in Hawaii, they took me to, there's this famous bay there called Hanama Bay. I call Hanuman Bay. So it's a protected bay, so all these far-out fish come there. You know, it's just like a little aquarium. And then people go snorkeling. So the devotees took me there, and I saw these fish, and they were looking at me, and I thought the fish are thinking, look at that stupid guy looking at us, and I just said, I'm getting me out of here. But if they were thinking, when you look at, you know, that they have the, I don't know, they don't have here a bird, they have a bird park also?
There is not very huge, but small area.
Malaysia has the biggest park. Singapore also. You know, you walk inside and there's millions of birds in there. So the birds are mentioned in the Bhagavatam as, you know, Krishna's artistic ability or something. And these far-out fish also with all the colors. Although the fish, if you look at their faces, they look very beautiful to me. But the colors are... So if they would think, well, what a wonderful creator Krishna must be to make so many different fish and so many... But who's thinking like that when they go and look at all that stuff? Nobody... No tour guide is telling him now that you see how God has made all these beautiful things. You know. They just tell you how wonderful that all of this tower is, so wonderful. And, you know, it's a, for the Earth planet, it's pretty far out. You know. The Indra's assembly hall is something like 100 yojanas long. 100 yojanas, 800 miles building. So many things, you know, in the higher planet. So much more, you know. Even Ravana, he had the buildings made out of gold. made out of gold bricks, you know, not just some gold leaf ones and what. Buildings made out of gold and silver. But even the Rakshasa, they, you know, they're very beautiful artwork things. But it's all coming from Krishna. And it, compared to Krishna, it's all, you know, not so wonderful. But it is wonderful because it's Krishna's creation. So if we appreciate the beauty of the material world, it's not that we should just never look at it. We should appreciate it, but it's Krishna's creation. You know, the beautiful waterfall, there's a beautiful, you know, or in Dubai, the beautiful, I guess the desert's very beautiful, the sunset is many colors. Krishna made the desert, huh? Right? It's not separate from Krishna. So if people think like that, if they would somehow understand, that's what Krishna is giving us in chapter 10, all these things, they're just from Him. Represent Him, the most beautiful animal, the most powerful animal, the most talented person. They're all representing a small part of Krishna's unlimited opulence. Then, you know, then you have His flute playing, which is also described, you know, unlimitedly attracts every living entity. So that the birds, sometimes they just start, they can't fly properly when they hear Krishna's flute. They just start going all over, fall out of the sky. Even the Gandharvas, when they hear Krishna's flute, even though they're such amazing musicians, when they hear Krishna's flute, they become bewildered. I've never heard such music. They just stunned. And then they can't fly their airplanes. So we get a little bit of a hint of that, you know, in the kirtan, and when we see the deities and everything. And we just want to get absorbed more and more, associated with devotees who are, you know, relishing Krishna, talking about Krishna, chanting Krishna, whatever you like about, you know, find out people who are also in the same mood and do it more and more, that's all. So that we can remember Krishna all the time. Everybody here, you're familiar with Bhagavad Gita pretty good, so you're very fortunate. So, any question or comment? I think we have long enough. All right. Minutes. So many. Soul bewildered by false ego that thinks does of all activities that are actually carried out by the three modes of nature. Please explain that. Well, that's more or less Bhagavad Gita, right? It's Ahankara Vimudatma. Think, I'm the doer. I did it. But no, we don't do it. We're just being pushed around by modes of nature. And ultimately, Krishna is doing everything. But in the bewildered condition, I think, I did it. I'm the doer. So many people. I don't need God, I did it myself. Right? I don't have to pray, I do it. I have my own power and ability. So that's the false ego. I'm this body and I am the doer. Just like example Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when he was going in the communist countries to sell books. So Prabhupada was always very, very happy to hear the reports. And then he came to Vrindavan. That was towards the end of Prabhupada's time with us. And that he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was patting his head and glorifying him. So Tamal Krishnaraj thought, well, Prabhupada really likes to hear the report of his preaching, so tomorrow he can come and personally tell Prabhupada. So he came in and he said, you know, he was telling Prabhupada that he was a little puffed up or something. And Prabhupada wasn't paying any attention to him. He was talking to other people. and just not really paying attention to him. So he was wondering. Then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You're not the doer." He said he took that to heart. He was very happy to hear that. You know, he was thinking, "I did all this." You know, Prabhupada was glorifying him the day before. Oh, he's so wonderful. Right in front of everybody. Then the next day he just ignored him. "You're not the doer." So he said, "You think I'm the doer."